out walking after midnight, out in the moonlight, just like we used to do. I'm always walking after midnight, searching for you. I walk for miles along the highway.
This is one of the most popular songs performed by country music legend Patsy Cline. It sets a certain mood. Underneath the sure-footed steadiness of that plodding rhythm, there's something yearning in her voice. You can hear the tug of heartache. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today we're going to look back on the life of Patsy Cline, who played her last show here in Kansas City in March of 1963, just before she died in a plane crash. Lauren Crum is here this morning to share what Patsy Cline means to her. Lauren is a young singer who's got kind of a country thing going on herself. Hi, Lauren.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So, is it true that Patsy Cline actually wasn't crazy about Walking After Midnight? I love this song.
No, she was not. She had to be pretty much dragged into recording it. In fact, she was contractually bound to record it. She was on a label that was like, well, you signed the contract, so.
It is so hard for me to imagine anyone, especially the singer of that song, not liking it.
I know, it's kind of bizarre to think about, especially just since it's such a big part of her legacy. But yeah, she called it a little old pop song.
What can you tell us about Patsy Cline's last show in Kansas City almost 55 years ago?
Well, I was there. No, I'm just kidding. I wasn't there. It was actually a benefit show for another sort of tragic loss. There was a DJ called Cactus Jack Call, who was on KCKN, which is a super old commercial station that's now gone. But he had died in an automobile accident, so this was a benefit show for him. And there was quite the lineup. George Jones was probably the biggest name. But I've read that it wasn't selling super well, and they begged Randy Hughes, her manager, please, 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 can you get Patsy to do this show? And then that sort of gave it that final push, and it ended up being a huge sold-out show. It was standing room only, and they did three shows, which is a little more standard for those times, but they did like a 2 o'clock, like a 5 o'clock, and an 8 o'clock show.
So I would love it if they still did 2 p.m. shows.
Right?
But so where were the shows?
At the time, it was called Soldiers and Sailors Memorial Hall, and now I can't think of it. Is it just Memorial Hall in KCK?
I think so, yeah.
Right. So it's been shortened a little bit. But yeah, I was there and apparently just super packed out. And my impression, it's hard sometimes to tell, but I think that she was kind of the closer for those shows and was really, really beloved.
And you've done a lot of sort of informal research on Patsy Cline as like just a fan and fellow musician. What else do you know about that sort of final chapter?
Well, one interesting thing, if you really delve in, is she was a really sort of no-nonsense person. She was really, like, straightforward and sarcastic and like affable. But she was really frank about this sort of impending sense of doom that she felt. And she had expressed sort of jokingly to people close to her that she didn't think that she was going to make it past 30, that she wasn't going to. She made a comment about, I've had two bad ones, and the third one will either be the charm or it'll kill me. Just really sad in light of what happened. But yeah, I know she gave like a beloved family photo album to Loretta Lynn, who was a good friend, and gave away a lot of garments and wrote a will on like airplane stationery a couple weeks prior.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So she had a bit of a premonition.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to get back to that final show in Kansas City. But when did you first discover the music of Patsy Cline?
I'm not sure how old I was. Young enough that my mom had the old Honda. So she was here to fact check that. We were in the Honda Accord, Mom. And every now and then when we'd go out shopping, I think we were probably like Venture or something. Shout out to Venture. And we got a Patsy Cline tape, and she got it, really. I had no idea. And I remember her putting it on the car and just being sort of transported by her voice and totally captivated. And that was really the only country in my house. For some reason, that one tape was like, this is country music. So for me, she was super iconic. And my parents were kind of like rock and roll parents with like some reggae and other stuff sprinkled in. So it was like very exotic to me at the time.
So what, I mean, I know that you were just a kid, but when you heard it, I mean, you remember hearing it for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
You might not have had the words to say what it was you were hearing then, but do you have them now?
Let's see. I definitely think I think part of it is a strong female voice, and just hearing female singers has always been really arresting for me and always really a cool experience. But I think to echo what you said, there's an ache in her voice, and you know, a good country has that redemption and epiphany. It's these major emotions, these major struggles, and her voice just is reflective of that. And I think as someone who is going to eventually want to be a performer, there's something about that just stops you in your tracks when someone's doing more than just performing, but they're feeling it. Yeah.
You know, what's funny is that I guess the ache in her voice that I hear, it doesn't sound like she's trying to sound achy. It sounds actually like she's maybe doing the opposite.
Right. No, and in her last recordings, they said she was they're having to stop because she would have tears and she would get too emotional. So she was definitely someone that poured true emotion into those experiences and into those recordings and her performances.
You've brought in a favorite Patsy Cline song for us to play. It's called Leavin' on Your Mind. And we'll hear it in just a second, but this is kind of a lesser known song, at least compared with big hits like the one we heard, or like I Fall to Pieces or something like that. Why do you want us to hear this song?
I'm always interested in people that are able to be multifaceted, to be a complex personality. And I think this song is a pretty standard, you know, you're going to leave me. It's a heartbreak song, which is a really typical thing for country. But there's just, again, there's something so much deeper about it than just this, you know, one more song. I just feel like no matter what she touches on, it's greater than just the thing itself. She sort of brings new life to it and really makes you feel it.
So. Well, let's listen to Leavin' on Your Mind.
If you got leaving on your mind, tell me now, get it over. Hurt me now, get it over. If you got leaving on your mind, if there's a new love.
From artists of all kinds take lessons and inspiration from the people they admire. What do you take from Patsy Cline?
I feel a possibly borderline weird kinship with her, because I feel like for me, as someone who loves country so dearly, and it's not necessarily a family tradition, I think she shared that. Her parents were kind of like, we don't really know where this really came from. And I think I strive to bring the elegance and the depth to country that she does, and I think her ability to cross over but still keep a foot in that country world and be able to be more than one thing, to be able to bring a vulnerability and a toughness. And she was such a big deal too, just as a feminist and being ahead of our time both vocally and as a feminist, so I think that's really inspiring. She's sort of this, to me, she's sort of a patron saint of women in music.
Tell me more about her background and about that feminism.
I mean, I'm sure, yeah, she would have been like, what are you talking about, Haas? If we told her she was a feminist. But I just mean, she called herself the Cline. She hung out at the bar next to the Opry and drank and told dirty jokes with Farron Young and George Jones and could... handled her own money, would never play without being paid before, was just, she wouldn't let people introduce her at the time. It was very like, here's pretty little Kitty Wales, she's going to sing you a song. And she wouldn't let herself be introduced that way. She did the more standard, here's Miss Patsy Cline, a more straightforward, she didn't want to be coddled. And I think she was just, she was just really tough. And I think, too, being able to be that person and be tough, but also be so vulnerable and so feminine and to you know, present heartache and then those kind of tender things and also be like a total bad BA.
What, I mean, does singing in this genre give you a different kind of appreciation for who she was and how she sang than you had before you were performing as a country singer?
Absolutely. I mean, she set a standard that you know, you hear something, it's so ubiquitous that you almost forget how difficult it is and what magic that they're making. So going in and trying to sing her songs and sing some of the standards that she put her touch on, absolutely. I mean, you realize what she's doing and how magnificent it is, and it's definitely given me respect for her style and for her ability to transcend any song and put her own personal touch on it.
Are there any other tidbits from her personal life that you think shed light on who she was and in a way like should be remembered?
I'm trying to think if there's like one great story. I definitely think sort of the transition of, which this isn't one little story, but the move into wearing the cocktail dresses and becoming this more elegant singer and all of that was sort of a foot-dragging thing in a way. And I think that's really interesting because we think if it wasn't your decision right out of the box, I mean, it doesn't belong to you, but it's, she made it her own and people sort of teased her about it, but then immediately copied.
So she was encouraged to start wearing cocktail dresses?
Right. She won this talent competition with Walking After Midnight, and the producers and her people were like, no, don't put on this tasseled cowgirl outfit. You know, we want you to present this image. And I think she really wanted to be country. And so in her own funny way, she expanded the boundaries of what that meant just with her own natural talent. So whether or not those little things were her or her handlers, her talent made it so, you know what I mean? It opened up this world and it allowed country to have kind of both things. And you could do these sort of Red Hot Mama kind of songs and sit on a hay bale, or you could be just doing this absolutely sort of pop song, but in this country vein. And so I'm sorry, that wasn't like a fun anecdote, but I think.
Is that something that, I mean, is there still kind of this question of how to present yourself and what is and isn't country? I mean, is that a tension you feel?
I mean, it's not something I spend a lot of time on at this point, only because I'm not in the world. She was in such a restrictive place. Women were in such a restrictive place in music and in general, you know. So I think she really probably had to think about it a lot more. And I have sort of the freedom to.
You're the beneficiary.
Yes, but because of people like her.
Her last song was I'll Sail My Ship Alone. Do you find that poignant?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's really, it's definitely indicative of her spirit. She was fiercely independent and tough and really didn't take anything from anybody. So it was the final song she recorded as well, or in the final batch, and then the final song that she ever sang here in KC. So,
is being the site of Patsy Cline's last concert something that you think Kansas City should care about, should talk about?
I mean, it's definitely part of her story. I guess I would focus more on just like, hey, she played here, but yeah, it's definitely an interesting part of her tale, and I'm glad that she has something to do with us, whatever it may be.
Well, Lauren Crum, thanks so much for sharing your personal take on the music of Patsy Cline.
Thank you for having me.
We're going out on I'll Sail My Ship Alone. Lauren sings with the Grizzly Hand and Ruddy Swain. Up next on KCUR's Central Standard, why is everyone saying y'all? There are a few reasons, actually. If you say y'all, or if you wish everyone would stop, you can share your story. 816-235-2888. With all the dreams I own, drifting out. Hi, I'm Gina Kaufman. I host KCUR Central Standard, and lately I have had to check a new impulse. The impulse to say y'all. Suddenly everyone around me is using this word, and it's sort of catching. But I feel a little bit like this isn't a word that belongs to me. It's not a word that I have said before. So I'm curious, why are more and more non-Southerners saying y'all? And is it okay A study, which we'll get into, shows that y'all is more accepted by younger generations than by older generations in the South and beyond. That's in part because of growing gender sensitivity. Saying you guys just doesn't cut it these days. But up north, historically, the word's been used mostly by the African American community, people whose families migrated to northern cities from the South. So whose word is it? Is it all y'all's or just some of y'all's? Call 816-235-2888 if you have a story or observation. I want to start by turning to NPR's Sam Sanders. When he hosted NPR's Politics podcast, he'd open each episode with a signature greeting. And Sam, I'd feel much better letting you deliver your greeting. How about it?
Yeah, I would just say, hey, y'all, it's the NPR Politics podcast.
So
Every time.
Tell me the story of how that came about.
It was really informal. So most of that podcast is unscripted, but we do script the top, the, you know, open. And so before we went into the booth for that first taping, I had a copy of that script for the first graph. And as with all scripts that I have, I kind of try to personalize them and make them as informal as possible. And the most informal and warm greeting that I could think of as a Texan was, hey, y'all. So I wrote, hey, y'all. I said, hey, y'all. And then it stuck. And I did it for, gosh, well over a year. And now people will see me out and about, like on the streets, and say, oh, my God, are you Sam Sanders? Can you just say y'all for me once?
Why do you think people were so fixated on something that felt just like not only the most natural thing to you, but the most commonplace conversational thing actually turns out to be extraordinary in the ears of a lot of your listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I think when delivered effectively, it connotes a certain level of warmth, which might be a thing that you don't expect when you're hearing about politics. And the second thing it does is establishes a certain informality for the conversation. And what we try to do the whole time was to have a conversation about really big ideas, but that was very open and welcoming and affirming. And starting out a conversation by saying, hey, y'all, immediately says to our listeners, we are not too stuck on ourselves. We're going to keep this simple. We're going to bring you in and just be welcoming.
And maybe we're from a lot of different backgrounds?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a Texan, so I just grew up with the word. But I think people heard it and said, well, this is not your typical DC Beltway, which is good.
And it did become kind of a thing, like something people talked about. Can you delve into that a little bit with us?
Yeah.
I believe maybe Sam has just disappeared into the ether, but I'm going to try real quick to check on that. Sam, you there? Okay, Sam's not there. We're going to get back to Sam's story about y'all in just a second. Let's bring someone else in on the discussion. CJ Real is with us. Good morning, CJ.
Hi, thanks for having me today.
So, CJ, can you talk to us a little bit about how you identify personally, and then we'll get into maybe why the word y'all speaks to you?
Yeah, so I am a transmasculine person. I'm non-binary, but I still identify as a male. And I am KFAB, which means I was coercively assigned female at birth, or what a lot of people would call like being born as a girl.
And you were kind of a fixture in Kansas City's art scene, but recently moved to Florida. And you happened to be in town for a while. We're grateful for the timing coincidence. Tell me about your relationship with the word y'all.
So y'all for me is something that I grew up hearing all the time as a Midwesterner. I grew up right outside of Kansas City in Liberty. And Liberty, when I moved there, was basically making the transition between being a farming community and like me moving into an area that was basically all farms, turning into a largely suburban area like we see now. So at the time, I heard y'all a lot growing up, but it was largely associated with the fact that it was a very white rural community, and I a lot of times heard it in association with very like conservative and racist people outside of the city. So I was really hesitant to use it growing up because that was the strongest association I had with the word. But whenever I was going through college, I started seeing more and more people who I like really liked and trusted and admired using the word y'all, to the point where I started seeing a lot of visibility online around its like gender neutral properties, which was very exciting to me. And as someone who regionally grew up seeing it used so comfortably by a lot of people, it felt like very familiar and is the most common plural you in America. So when people are really resistant to use a lot of gender neutral language, it's a really like comforting and disarming, I think, way to insert like neutrality into verbal situations.
I want to back to gender inclusivity in just a second, but I'm kind of fascinated that you grew up so close to Kansas City and what is now a suburb of Kansas City hearing y'all, because I grew up in Kansas City, but like in the city proper, and I never heard y'all.
Yeah, absolutely. So Liberty, as I said, it's gone through a huge shift in just like being very rural and farming oriented. When I grew up there, most neighborhoods not being there, and now are just these very like cookie cutter suburban developments where you see a lot of like the same model with different facades on them. So now I don't know. It's probably still used there a lot, but maybe less or so. But when I was first there, it seemed to be a lot poorer, a lot smaller houses, a lot of people with ranches and farms. That was a lot of the people that we were going to school with. And y'all seemed like very fitting, I think, for a lot of people to use that in I mean, yeah, these rural communities. Now it looks a lot more like Kansas City there. Oftentimes there's like more traffic than I experienced down here. But I agree that whenever I was coming into town when I was younger, coming into the city, that wasn't really a word I would hear as much as now when I'm familiar with the communities here of people that are using gender-neutral language and I think have embraced it for those reasons.
So talk to me about how you've personally experienced other options for addressing groups of people, options like you guys or other things.
Yeah, so I think a lot of times people, you see it a lot of times in the service industry, especially when you have to address more than one people or more than one person that you're serving. Or if you are going up to like even a group of friends, a lot of times that can be even more painful when somebody addresses a group of people based on like their appearance and what they assume their gender identities might be. So I think a lot of times it comes from like a intention of inclusivity to be like, hey, ladies, or hey, guys, what's going on? Just trying to seem really comfortable and familiar with the group. And a lot of times trans people or non-binary people do not pass at all. I would say most times people would read them as cis. So a lot of times it's really hyper uncomfortable when you can tell somebody is just meaning to like help break the ice with you.
And it's not working.
Not at all.
So talk to me. Do you remember the first time you used y'all yourself?
I think it was probably directly as a result of this really cute meme on Facebook, which featured a cowboy holding their hat and there are like flames all around the cowboy. And it says, y'all is my favorite gender neutral pronoun. And I think I just like gagged so hard when I saw it. It was so cute. So I think after that, I was like, I am going to do this. I love it. So I think that was a few years ago. I just found that probably on Facebook or Tumblr or something and started adopting it more and more there. It was already a very comfortable like word for me to hear because I grew up hearing it so much. But I think, yeah, especially just like through college and having more awareness of trying to create gender neutral spaces and like eradicate gender binaries that exist every day. And I consciously saw that like a lot of people in other cultures and communities outside of like these more like racist conservative cultures that I had seen use it previously. I think realizing that it belonged to so many more inclusive cultures combined with, you know, these really cute Facebook meme ploys got me to start using it.
I am curious whether you think that it's like increased usage outside the South. Do you see that playing out differently online than IRL or in real life?
I mean, I definitely see it more online than I maybe hear it every day. But I think that's because I'm part of like specific communities online of people that really, you know, don't gender people unless they know specifically what group of people they're talking to or have been held more accountable than is like comfortable or really safe to hold someone accountable in person for misgendering groups of people. Whereas online, you can kind of do that with a level of anonymity or like safety. Whereas like in person, if somebody misgenders me or a group of us, I'm like less likely to call them out or like ask them to change their language unless, you know, it's specifically like harming a friend of mine and I like really want to speak out for their benefit.
Let's get back to Sam Sanders, but I have some more questions for you. We'll just kind of do it back and forth this way. Sam, where were we?
You know, I think I lost the connection for a second, so I forget where it cut out, but okay. Catch me up.
Well, I think you were talking about that you saying, hey, y'all, to open the politics podcast for NPR was kind of a thing for a lot of listeners, and
yes,
people wanted to talk to you about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing that expression connoted was that the conversation would be informal and open and welcoming, and it wouldn't be so stuffy. Like, it kind of set the tone as a loose, conversational, welcoming chat with friends. And that was the biggest thing for me. And so me saying, hey, y'all, was just me being as much of me as I could be. And being a Texan lifelong, that was the best way that I knew to say hi. But yeah, folks loved it.
Do you think, do you think it's surprising that so many people are coming around to adopting the word, like as adults who didn't grow up using it the way you did?
No, I'm really pleased by it and happy with it because I love the word and the expression. And I think that there's a few things going on with it. You know, besides the issues around gender that were brought up, I do think it is kind of an example of the permeation of just Black culture throughout the country. You know, as much as y'all is a Texan or a Southern word, it's also a Black word. And so a lot of times when I hear it or see it, it'll be used a lot in Black Twitter or in Black conversation or in Black music. And so I'm not surprised in that regard that it would spread across the entire country because Black culture is all over the country, too.
Yeah, I mean, do you identify with that part of the history of the word? I mean, how do you understand it as partly a Black term?
Yeah, I mean, so I'm Black and I'm Texan and I'm Southern, I guess, as well. So I don't really separate those two things. I think that Black culture is Southern culture and vice versa. And I think that Black culture is American culture. And so much of what becomes American culture is, you know, birthed in Black communities. So I'm not surprised to see the word take off. I guess for me, this conversation is just kind of opening up a whole new type of conversation because I just didn't think that much of the phrase itself. And now to hear all these other ideas come out of it, it's very cool.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Sam, I wonder for you, I mean, just the word appropriation, is that a word that you would associate with this conversation? I mean, there's so much concern right now about taking on the trappings of an identity that is not your own. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I grapple with the word appropriation a lot. I think that culture itself is an ongoing cycle of creation and transmission. And sometimes you can call that appropriation, but a lot of times I think that's just how culture works. I think the difference between cultural transmission and cultural appropriation is a level of respect for the subset which an idea comes from. So if you're going to use the phrase, hey, y'all, or use the word y'all, as long as you respect the culture it came from and not deliver it with too much of a gimmick, I'm fine with it. You know, I
can
I
totally relate
to spread.
As an user of oi.
Yeah, yeah, like good words and good phrases should spread. Just respect where they came from. So I have no problem with anyone using the word y'all. Just don't play with it. Don't say, hey, y'all, and make it gimmicky and jokey. Just say, hey, y'all. It's fine. Do it.
So, Sam, I'm going to treat you as a, I mean, I want to understand how to use y'all correctly. And since you grew up using it and do it naturally, I think you're a good person to ask. There's y'all and then there's all y'all. And I wonder if you can talk to us about the distinction there.
I think all y'all is more emphatic. Saying y'all is just the same, I think, as saying you guys or like you girls or, you know, saying hey to a room or a crowd or a group. When you say all y'all, you are, I think, emphasizing the fact that this is for everybody. Everyone pay attention. It's for all you. Look at me now. So there's a difference in, I guess, emphasis with it. I actually rarely say all y'all because sometimes the way you say it, it can be kind of threatening. Like, all y'all right now, look at me. It's a bit foreboding, I think. But I don't think there's really a rule for it. I think whatever feels right, you got to kind of do what's right for you. I don't always use the word y'all. I use it when it feels appropriate. I use it when I'm with friends. I use it, you know, when it feels right. But yeah, there's no rule. So I probably couldn't give you a clear-cut kind of list of ways to use it. Just whatever feels right.
Do you think that there's a difference between saying everyone and saying y'all? Because I feel like those two things are kind of different, just in what they mean.
Yeah. I mean, I think the entire thing with y'all is that it connotes a certain form of authenticity. I'm speaking to you in my realest voice. I'm giving you the real me. So that's the big difference for me. And I think that's part of why the word is taken off. People are craving authenticity, and that is a thing that we want in the news that we consume and the things that we hear. So saying y'all is about the authentic. So for me, the difference is when you say everyone, you're saying it, but when you say y'all, you really mean it.
And it, with everyone, I might be talking also about people who aren't right in front of me, like the whole
exactly.
world.
Y'all is personal. Y'all is you right here looking at me, me looking at you, y'all, us.
CJ, do you have questions about y'all for Sam as a new y'all user?
Well, the last part you were saying especially I'm interested in. I was researching online kind of its specific like Southern origins and the development of y'all. And something I thought was really interesting was slightly different than what you're saying, because they were saying that as Southerners, oftentimes when you direct y'all at somebody, even if it's at maybe a person in front of you, that a lot of times it's referencing like you and your people and your family. And that was like a measure of the authenticity or friendliness of it, was it's kind of like openness to like you and the people that you surround yourself with. So I guess I wonder like if that's something in Texas or like with your experience with the word, if that's something you've experienced or if you think maybe that's like more of a regional interpretation.
I think it's, yeah, that's kind of true. I can definitely recall sometimes when I've said y'all, when talking to other black people or other Texans, I meant all Texans or all black people, mm-hmm. you know, more than just in the room. But it's one of those words where it all depends on how you say it. And there's a lot of words that are like that. The type of inflection, the length at which it's delivered, it can mean so many different things. It's almost like profanity. Like the way you say the word almost means more than the word itself.
When KCUR's Central Standard returns, we'll hear from a linguist about how language changes and migrates, and we'll hear from you. 816-235-2888. We want to hear whether you use y'all and why. I'm Gina Kaufman, back in a minute. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. I've been talking to Sam Sanders of NPR and CJ Real, a young Kansas City artist until his recent move to Florida, and an advocate from within the local LGBT community. They both say y'all, and it seems like plenty of you do too. We'll take your calls about why at 816-235-2888. And I'm especially interested in if you have like a story or journey with this word, like maybe you didn't used to use it and you do now, or you've always used it despite the ridicule and now like other people are using it now that it's cool and like whatever, man. So just call us 816-235-2888 as Sarah and Roland Park has done. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I speak Spanish also, and when I was first immersed in that language, I was always sort of comparing and contrasting the two languages, like the shortcomings of one versus the other. And once I was spending a lot of time with bilingual people, we were frequently just choosing the better of two words from either language and substituting it where appropriate, just for efficiency's sake. So I think that once I was able to do that, I also considered y'all again, because before I had heard y'all and I thought that just sounds ridiculous to me. But my family is from Philadelphia, and a lot of them say use for the same purpose. And I thought, well, that's even
more. Well, what is that purpose? I don't know if we've addressed that, Sarah. What's the purpose of y'all?
To address more than one person at a time, you plural, with one word. With one simple word.
Okay, I'm going to get some response to this one from a linguist. We are joined by Chris Streliff. Hi, Chris.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what would you say about the word y'all in terms of grammar and usage? What is this word doing for us in our language?
The caller's right. Standard English has a hole in it. Our pronoun system in English has been simplified dramatically over the last 800 to 1,000 years. We used to be able to make a distinction between when we were talking to one person, and we would have used the form thou in that case, or when we were talking to multiple people, and then we'd use ye or you, depending on some other grammar stuff. And over
this
time,
explains so much. I never understood the whole thou and ye.
Yeah. So there's kind of an ironic thing there. Thou was the familiar that you'd use with family and people you knew well, and ye was the was what you'd use with superiors, with plural, and then. When the French, as I understand, within the French were kind of connected with the aristocracy in England, English sort of took the French tradition of a distinction between superiors and subordinates, and ye became the form of address for superiors. So if you were talking to the king, you would use ye. If you were talking to your dad, you'd use thou.
And so then did it stop being plural?
Yeah. So it generalized. We kind of thou fell out of usage because it shows up in the King James Bible to talk to God. Thou is kind of thought of as being formal, but actually that was sort of a rhetorical move to show an intimate and comfortable relationship with God. And so thou was actually the familiar ye, and then eventually you extended to become the only one we have. So the caller's exactly right. Y'all fills in a gap, and other dialects have filled this grammatical gap in other ways. Yens in Pittsburgh, yous in Philadelphia and other northeastern cities, you lot in some British dialects, or you guys traditionally in the Midwest and West.
Does it surprise you to see the way that the South has historically filled this gap being adopted so enthusiastically recently outside the South, in spite of often, until very recently, being kind of scorned and treated as like an error?
Yeah. So, you know, it's tricky to know what the source is. The word is taking on different meanings and different usages. And so we have kind of popular ideas about the South, kind of the hateful or nice ways to think about Southerners, depending on how, where you're coming from, is we think of Southerners as being kind of slow, and we think of Southerners as being really comforting and welcoming. So if you survey people's attitudes about regions, they usually say that English in the South is bad, but English in the South sounds really nice because it's welcoming and comforting. So if we selectively use ideas about Southernness, and that gets attached to y'all as a way to welcome people and make them feel comfortable and attached to that part of popular ideology, then it makes a lot of sense. But as Sam said, there may be other sources. Y'all is a feature of African-American English, and there's lots of contact with African-Americans throughout the country. Or it could just be a separate coincidence that sort of independent of either the South or of this feature being in African-American English, you all has become a useful way to avoid you guys and to avoid you and other forms.
I read a study from a few years back that shows that y'all seems to be spreading outside the South, especially among younger generations. The study seems a bit flawed in that it's based on a survey that just asked respondents whether they use the word and how often. And most of us are not totally aware of how we speak, first of all. But also, this word that has historically had some negative baggage for a lot of people who don't use it and then kind of imposed on people who do. I mean, it's hard to know whether there's also an issue with whether people are totally admitting their usage. But what's interesting is that, if nothing else, it shows that the anti-y'all sentiment would be decreasing because, you know, younger people, if they're using it, aren't ashamed to just say, yes, I use this term.
Yeah, yeah. And so the interesting thing is if it's meaning different things. So if it's coming to mean a way to be inclusive and a way to recognize multiple people, multiple addressees, then that word becomes and has a different meaning and is used by people in a different way from maybe the traditional thing, which would be, I just don't want to sound like I'm from the South accidentally.
Well, let's hear from some callers. We've got Richard, who is driving in Kansas. Hi, Richard.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Did you pull over?
I did. I'm at a rest stop right now.
Great. What you got to say?
So I actually grew up in Texas. So I grew up in San Antonio, and y'all was just a normal part of our language. I don't think I even realized how often I would use it. But now I live in Minnesota, which is a very different world than in Texas. And I'm a teacher. And I remember the first few times saying y'all in class, the students would kind of laugh because they weren't used to hearing it. But after my few years of being up there, they're kind of used to that now. But it's interesting. I think when I send y'all in texts or in, you know, kind of messages on Facebook, that's when people most of the time notice at this point, especially people from up north. They're like, whoa, what's with all this y'all Texas stuff going on? And I don't even realize once again that I'm using it. And I'm just trying to hold on to it, to hold on to my Texas roots as long as I can, I guess. So it's interesting that by text, it seems to still be stigmatized versus in speaking, it's more normalized.
People have gotten maybe used to it in speech. Well, thanks, Richard.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
You know, I'm curious because I posted something to Facebook about that we were going to have this discussion, and tons of people responded and responded very quickly with stories about their own relationship with this word. And something that came up quite a few times is people who had been in one way or the other encouraged to stop using y'all after moving from the South, or had perceived that it wasn't okay to use y'all in certain company, but that it was okay in other company. And that history, like that personal history that a lot of people share up against this recent embrace of it, seems interesting to me. I mean, Sam, do you have a history with being encouraged to shed y'all?
You know, no one's ever said it to my face outside of Texas. There was a time in college and student government where one of my counterparts was scolded for using the word y'all too much in a formal speech she had to give. But we all said, hey, this is Texas, leave her alone. I've never been discouraged from using the word. I think for me, sometimes there's a bit of confusion when people hear me talk because they can't quite figure out if I'm a Texan or a Southerner or this or that. Lots of folks said they would hear me on the radio or in podcasts for a long time and not know that I was Black. And then there's times where I'll use words from other cultures and places. Like, I use the word hella a lot, and that's a Californian word. I lived there for a while. So there's some confusion, I think, sometimes with me. But even in spite of that, no one's ever told me no. And if they did, I would not do what they said.
And you're pointing out something that seems obvious, but maybe it is worth pointing out, that like this idea that we all just come from one place and are influenced by one kind of person is false. I mean,
oh yeah, I've lived in so many places. I've been away from Texas, gosh, for over 10 years now. I spent a lot of time in California, which I love dearly. So I'm kind of a mashup of where I've been and the folks, all kinds of folks that are in my life. So yeah, I'm not one thing. And I think that increasingly with the ability to be online with all kinds of people, there's this mashup of culture and language that I find to be really exciting.
But
can also be confusing.
Yeah. And yeah, it can cause moments of change, which maybe we're in with y'all. And yeah, we're exploring that. It's really cool. Let's talk to Marianne in Eudora, Kansas. Hi, Marianne.
Hi.
What can you share?
I thought Sam's comment was really interesting when he equated the word y'all with being Black. My mom was from Arkansas and was very Southern. In fact, she used that word in a sentence by saying, y'all get in here right now. And I'm married to a black man from Kansas, so half of my family is black. And I always felt uncomfortable using the word y'all around the black part of my family, because in my head, it connotates Southern racist redneck. So I was really kind of awake when I heard Sam say, culturally, that word is also very familiar in black communities.
You know, it's interesting just talking. I mean, some of the words that come up when you describe your previous associations with the word y'all, I mean, there seems to be a kind of acceptability in having a little bit of like open negative feelings toward the South. And I'm curious about that. I mean, Marianne, can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Well, especially since I had a Southern mother and a black husband, and the two of them developed a beautiful relationship, but words were often sort of, a wake-up. Words like y'all, traditionally Southern words, Southern meaning racist, and sometimes in my household. And so there was something very unique about trying to mesh these different cultures and the words that we avoided and the words that we chose to use to create unity. Well, and y'all was not one of them.
I'm going to get Sam's response to this, because we just heard from Marianne that she thinks of Southern culture as a racist culture and thinks of it as separate from black culture.
Yeah, I mean, I think my interpretation is different. Having lived in the North and the South, I know that you can find racism anywhere. I would see it in places like Boston, you know? So I don't think it's a particularly Southern thing. I also think that, like, some of my favorite experiences as a child were in the South. My mother's from Birmingham, and I was in Alabama a lot growing up. I grew up eating Southern food, and the South, in many ways, feels like home. So, I kind of had that distinction, and I think it's all about your experience, but I do think that we can't say that one, you know, part of the country is only known for one thing. You know, the South can't just be racist in the way that the North can't just be not racist. It's much more complex than that.
Let's talk to Jerry and Lee Summit. Jerry, we only have a little time, but I want to hear from you before we go.
Okay. I'm in my 60s, and when I was growing up, Beverly Hillbillies was a big show, and the tagline when they were leaving would be, y'all come back now, here. And I lived in Northeast, with a very prominent Italian community back then, so all of us little Italian kids were saying, y'all come back now, here, you know, as a joke, and I still use that today. And I read that Paul Henning, the creator of Beverly Hillbillies, grew up in Independence, Missouri, and he kind of used that phrase from his childhood.
Well, so, I mean, a lot of people probably do have that show as an association with the word y'all. And Chris, as our linguist, I mean, do you think, I don't think that we necessarily appreciate the role of pop culture in how language changes over time.
You can definitely imagine ways that pop culture could help shape what words mean to people. So, you know, the Beverly Hillbillies is an example of a way that they needed to create a negative characterization of rural people and Southern people. And so they use that word to mean something. But you can also imagine the ways now pop culture could help the word with different ideas about people, different ideas about cultures spread with a different meaning.
So, I mean, CJ, as you listen to all of this discussion, do you think differently about your own usage of the word y'all, or do you leave the show kind of in the same place you started? Do you have questions?
I think it's just interesting, especially to hear people's idea of the appropriation of y'all from Southern culture and its dissipation through pop culture. And I feel like from people that I've talked to, I've largely heard that because white people, it like was created as a part of AAVE, but because white people have used it so much too.
African-American vernacular English.
Yes, thank you. That it is less of an appropriation issue and is more of a cultural exchange. And it definitely makes me like feel more comfortable using it.
Well, our time is up. CJ Real, Kansas City artist with us from Florida. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Chris Streliff, linguist, joining us from Northwestern Missouri State University. This has been fascinating.
Thanks.
We also spoke with Sam Sanders of NPR. You can listen back to this conversation at kcur.org/centralstandard and keep talking on Twitter. We are at KCURCST. Tomorrow, the history of the trumpet and the closing of beloved Kansas City stores. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan. Caitlin Troutman is our intern. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next. Later, y'all.